What does it mean to lose your home, your country, the ground beneath your feet, and still know exactly who you are? Today's guest has lived that question. Born in Bethlehem, she called six countries home, survived the first month of the invasion of Kuwait, and spent a lifetime searching for belongings across continents and cultures. Through it all, she discovered something remarkable, that you can be scattered and still be whole. Her story is a testament to faith, resilience, and parts of us that no circumstances can take away. And it's a conversation about something we all long for, to belong. It is a joy to welcome my guest today. I am so excited. Miranda is an Arab American Christian born in Bethlehem, whose life has unfolded across cultures, continents, and moments of history. A former Middle East cultural consultant and a senior Arab linguist, she is called Six Countries Home. She is the author of an award-winning memoir, Scattered Yet Whole, A Palestine Christian Woman's Journey Through Love, Loss, and Belongings, which was named a finalist in the Global Forward Indies Book of the Year's Award. Now, she writes with humor, compassion, and the wisdom of someone who has lived from history from within it. Now, Miranda, I am so excited to have you on the show, and I can't wait to have this discussion. So welcome to my show, and I just want to just dive right into it, because you are just an amazing individual.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Daisy. Actually, you cannot be as excited as I am, and this is the truth. This is the truth. It is amazing how I never thought that 2 years ago that I will ever write a book, leave alone to be now going places and speak, having conversations about it. Thank you. You're giving me a great opportunity here.
You're very welcome. I'm so excited. So let's start with the book itself, because you waited for this moment to tell it. You decided to write Scattered Yet Whole and go to publish it now, not 10 years ago. So why now?
There are many reasons, obviously. First of all, you have to know that I am an author by calling. I've been so since I was a child. My first story was published in a newspaper in Kuwait, but in Arabic language. When I was 11 years old, the first one, and it was published and people read it, and I was only 11 years old, and that's how I started. Then I began to write poetry. In school, I was in charge of the bulletin, the school bulletin. It was my chance to... I used to write poetry more than anything else. I love poetry. And then... So all of that was something I liked, and I did side by side with my education. Then I went to college. I did it again on the side. My teachers were recognizing that in me. They would ask me to prepare some things for them, you know, promotional material and all. But it was something I love. The reason I did not write it till recently was, let's put it this way, life. Life happened. If you read my book, you'll see the many tragedies and many nice things that happened to me, but it kept me on the go all the time. So that plus later on, since 2011, I started my own company. I have a translation company. Mm-hmm. I started it, so I was focused on it, trying to get contracts with the government. Then my mom and dad were getting old, so I began to be the caregiver for my mom first, and then my mom passed away in 2020. Then my dad passed away 2 years ago. All this time, I was a caregiver, I was a mother, I was a wife, and I was a business owner. But it was inside me. I wanted... The reason I got to write it eventually was my dad. The last few months of his life, he was staying with me, and he would tell me stories, and especially about the problem we have with the Jewish, with Israel. So he was telling me, Miranda, mm-hmm. Jews were our friends. So he would tell me, that's what got me excited. And he named his, he had two best friends. They were Arabs of Jewish. People don't understand that Judaism is a religion, not a citizenship. And it's not somebody we hate or we like. The Jewish people, they were friends. They were neighbors. So my dad said, yeah. The greatest thing that we regretted is that your mom and I had friends, and then they came to us and they said, we're sorry, now they don't want us to be friends with you. And that was the end of it. So his stories, then story about his dad, about the struggle, how they struggled. We were a very poor family, very poor.
Yeah.
My parents were poor, but they had 6 children because we are Catholics. We don't believe in birth control. So, and those 6 kids, and those 6 kids proved to be a blessing to my parents and blessing to one another. And that we will find in the book. So we talk about that. So then when my dad passed away, I was so sad. Suddenly I felt like an orphan. You know, I'm fortunate. I was in my 70s when I became an orphan. But you can never deal with being an orphan. It's very hard.
Yeah.
I was so depressed, sad. No mom, no dad suddenly. And then that's when I felt, you know what? I'm going to write the book. Because that's how I've always been the person who deals with pain by writing. So
I
had not mentioned to you that I wrote a book before that, children book, called mm-hmm. Daddy, Please Don't Cry. And that I wrote again for another sad situation in the family. We lost our 23-year-old niece to a car accident 1 week before graduating from college. So.
Wow.
So that was the book I wrote because that's what also what motivates me. I'm an author with a purpose.
Yes.
So that time, a purpose, and usually purpose for others and for me, because it really helps me with my sorrow. And that's how I really treated my sorrow over mom and dad. And I smile when I think about them now. I say they must be looking at from up there and saying, I'm glad, Miranda, you did what we expected you to do. You know, I made them. I brought their legacy to the world.
I love that. I love that. And for those who are just meeting you, what is the memoir like really about at its heart?
At its heart, it's about family life. It's about my family in particular, because it was the ideal family. When I say my family, I mean my parents and their children and grandchildren. I see around me families around me. They don't even know their cousins. They meet probably with the grandmother. And there isn't that kind of relationship. And I didn't want that for my kids and my family. We've been talking to them about it. And I wanted them to get closer to their faith. Which is also, you know, they have a lot of information coming from everywhere. So my main purpose, I had several reasons, but one of them was to let and open it to all the immigrants, get to know who you are. Because when you know where you came from, you can be a better person where you are today. Because why?
Oh,
you bring the best of your country or your society or community. And obviously, when you believe in goodness, you're going to take only the goodness from the new society that you became part of. And you exchange it. I tell them, mix with other people. You know, like some immigrants come, like you have Chinatown, I don't know what town. We don't do that, but I encourage other kids to go and meet and know, because the people you see from a distance as you're afraid of because you think they are monsters, get close to them, you find they're your friends. And that's how people can become one. They have unity. They have compassion for each other. So that was the goal from that. Plus, I wanted to honor my parents, or what they did, maybe three chapters about what they did for us. I needed I had to do that. And also to make the people understand, see Palestinians as faces and human beings, not as numbers and as terrorists, because we're not.
Right.
And so there were several reasons behind that, you know?
I love that. I love that. Now, the title itself is so powerful, and I imagine it holds a lot of meaning. Like, what does scattered yet whole mean to you?
Okay, it's very easy. Scattered, I am scattered. I am someone born in Bethlehem, went to Kuwait, like your dad came to America, went to Kuwait, my dad went to Kuwait to make some money so that we go back to our country and build a house.
Yeah.
He wanted, his dream was to build a house and send us all to college. By the time we finished in 67, I was 17, Israel took Bethlehem. There was no home to go back to. You know, so I went to Cairo to study. I didn't study in my country again for the same reason. Went to Cairo. But then I found out, even though I'm going to all these countries, I am becoming bigger. I'm becoming, my horizon is wider. I am learning about other people's traditions, food, beauty. I saw beauty in everybody. And that fact, the fact that you see that beauty is by opening up to other people. And so at the end of the day, today, while I'm scattered, I was scattered. In fact, I am whole. Why? In every country, I have so many people I love, and they love me. And we are still together. We are still together, like my Egyptian friends from college. Every year, I go to Egypt, every year. And if you are on Facebook, you will see a lot of pictures of them. So we are whole. I'm still the same person. My love, the people, I got bigger. My horizon got larger and all. But I am still the same. In my core, I am still the same. I'm the person my parents raised, brought to this world, raised, and I try to shine as much as possible their light on the people that I know. So really, I'm still whole.
I love that.
Yeah.
You are still whole, for sure. Now, how can a person like be scattered across countries, cultures, and losses and still remain whole?
Very easy. If you believe in who you are and you believe in what you're doing in life, you accept people, and you take, like I said, when you come to America, you take little from here, little from there, and it'll make you even better. Because there are some traditions that are silly, that you don't understand why people, you know, stick to them. You can part with these and take, you find every culture has its strong points and has got its own values.
Yes.
You still remain also. If I am someone, I believe in God, and I go, now I have Muslim, actually most of my friends are Muslims, and they might reject Jesus as God, but they have high respect for Jesus Christ. They have him in the, they mention him in the Quran, Virgin Mary is mentioned in the Quran. So I might not agree with them, they don't agree with me when it comes to that level, I believe he is the Son of God, but at the end of the day, we look at what we have in common. What we have in common is we both are believers, and we know when you're a believer, a true believer, you will do your best to do good.
Yes.
Doesn't mean we are angels. Yes. We are not angels. But that's why God came to us, and we have the books, the religions, to make us better. So I don't see anything. It's very easy to be scattered at home.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, is that wholeness something that you always had or something that you had to discover through everything that you lived?
I definitely discovered through my life, the life I lived. Definitely. Because, but like when I was in Bethlehem, I thought I'm only Palestinian Christian. I went to Kuwait. I started opening up to other cultures and other religions. I came to Egypt. It was little by little it happened. I cannot say it was. You know, you grow in every direction, you know. And thankfully, I grew in that direction, you know. And I love them. I genuinely love them. I love my Indian family. I married Indian. My first husband was Indian. And I love them till today. They come to visit me. Even though I remarried. Yeah. Even though I remarried. And they still come to visit me. I love them. So... Mm-hmm. Just open your heart to the world and you'll be amazed.
Right.
That's what I believe in.
Oh, I love that. Now, this is a theme that I think will move people deeply, even those who have never lived it. You write about what it means to lose a homeland without losing your identity. For someone who has never experienced displacement, help us understand that. Like, how do you hold on to who you are when so much around you is taken or changed?
Yeah, and many people are they lose other things, not necessarily their homeland. You're right. They might lose their, they might lose themselves even. They might not know who they are and how I do it. Again, I don't know. I just, to me, it sounds so simple. It might not be very deep. I'm not a psychologist, but from my experience, it is just by accepting people, loving them. Another important thing I noticed from my when I compare myself with some friends, I don't look at people who are better than I am, in the sense, better means richer, who have better homes, better cars. I think that also can create bitterness. I didn't have that from my childhood. I never had that. I don't know why. I mean, I don't say I'm. It's just my nature? Is it because my mom and dad were always very content? You know, I think contentment, when you are content and you open your heart to the world and you try to see goodness in everybody, I mean, just forget about what you are told, hate this and hate that and that's your enemy and all that. I mean, I'll be honest with you, the other day I went to a restaurant in New Orleans. And this gentleman, the owner, is an amazing owner. He's Israeli, not Jewish. Jewish are people. I mean, they don't affect me at all. They believe in God and all.
Right.
Israeli. And then when he came to talk to me, I mean, I was open to even to speak with him. I was nice to him. I didn't know what he was thinking. I didn't know what his stand was. Fortunately, he turned out to be so pro-Palestine. I mean, that was, of course, a plus. I forgot to send him the book. He wanted me to send him the book. But what I'm saying, even Israeli, which means to me, they are the enemies of Palestine at the moment, as a country, not as Jews. I mean, I keep stressing that to many people because people are so confused. Oh, you're anti-Semitic. I say, guys, I am Semitic. Arabs are Semitic people. How can I be anti-Semitic?
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, even though I knew he was Israeli, I opened my heart to him. I was going to welcome him as a human being. So if we stop remembering the pain and start opening up, that's what brings us closer. That's what really makes a person become whole because they have friends. People will see that they are genuine. They'll see how genuine you are.
Right.
They fall in love with you, and then you will start, they will open up, and you'll see we're all people. We all are good and bad and ugly at the same time. You know, so that's what I don't know, maybe that's what I can say. I don't know, probably if a psychologist will say something else. That's how I handled it. That's how I believe
I like how you handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So what have you learned about the parts of us that can never truly be lost? Like sometimes like our childhood can never be lost, you know, the way we were brought up and so forth. Yeah. So what do you think you've learned about the parts of us that can never truly be lost in your life? The parts that stay
I've
with us.
I've learned that they must be very part of the very core of who I am. And I accept them. I mean, there are things, they might sound, again, like I said, some, you know, silly practices of a culture.
And
I didn't lose them on purpose. I might think, well, I don't know why we're doing this, but okay. And I didn't lose them because it ties me to who I am. Because you don't want to lose who you were while becoming who you are today. You don't want to lose who you were. And I just accept them. I even sometimes share them with others and make them see the beauty of them. Whether I mean, mostly they are things I like. Now, if it is something that stays with me once in a while, let me be honest about that. When I was working in counterterrorism, you know, I mentioned that I was I was a linguist and I was a researcher for web researcher, and I helped a lot in catching some people. Let's put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, and because I'm a linguist, I was the government's advisor, certain part of the government, advisor on the Islamic belief. Because, you know, when the Al-Qaeda people were issuing statements, they will always quote from the Quran. So they would want to understand what is said in that. I had to not only translate, I had to tell them what's behind it.
Yeah.
And while doing this, I started building kind of resentment towards Islam. You know, even though I know Muslims are not like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what's happening with us Christians in America.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Christianity many believe in here, I don't accept, because they changed the face of Jesus. Jesus is a peace lover. He's never behind go fight and kill.
Right.
How do you justify that? So
for me, this is
the same happened with them. This is Al-Qaeda. It's a group of Muslims who went back to the old book. I mean, it's a Quran, no doubt. But they went and they wanted to practice that. So anyway, so I developed some resentment and I didn't like myself. Now that you mentioned it, I didn't like myself. So what I tried to do, initially I was really like, I would talk to my people close to me about it, and I was angry about their stand, like, is the religion tells them and all. But then I said, what am I doing? I mean, I know that I lived with the Muslims. They are such wonderful people. So then I started pulling myself out. If I read anything about them, after I left my job, I would read about them. I don't want to read it. Something annoys me about what people are writing. I'm going to be part of that. Little by little, it disappeared from my life. And little by little, I came back to myself.
Right.
And the fact that I traveled to Egypt to my friends and my Muslim friends here, wonderful people, you begin to go back to who you are.
Right.
You know? Yes.
Oh, I love that. And for the listeners out there, if you have ever searched for where you belong or held on to hope through something that tried to break you, this conversation is going to stay with you. Follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week we bring you the voices that remind us of our shared humanity, our resilience, and our capacity for hope. Now, you know, faith and family are clearly the foundation of your whole journey, and I'd love to explore that. How did your faith shape your journey through all of it, like the losses, the upheavals, the, you know, search for belonging?
Again, this is, to me, a very simple, easy thing, because faith is, to me, is, I go to church. Of course, we Catholics, we go to church every Sunday. We have our prayers. We have certain things we need to do, which I do happily and joyfully. But I also know that to be a Christian is to live the faith, not to just go to church and all of that. So if you make it a point to live your faith, if you make it that point, I think that is the best way that you can keep it, and you can. Yeah. And so what it does, it controls everything I do. It really does. And when I do something wrong, and we all do wrong things, you know, like for example, well, no examples. I don't want to waste too much time. So when you do something, that, like, maybe I'm feeling angry towards a friend,
yes,
and I tell myself I shouldn't be, you know,
right?
Like if I hear one of my siblings or a neighbor or a friend, not cursing, we don't use bad words at all. We don't use, you know, but like cursing means like wishing somebody, I hope this happens to them.
Yes.
I get very, very upset, because to me, I remember Jesus said, you cannot, because you don't have, you have no control with one hair in their head. So I live it. That's how faith affected my life. I live it. I judge every step I take. With my faith. If I always tell myself, if Jesus is here and I ask him, what will he tell me?
Right.
Actually, this is my question always. What will Jesus do? What will he want me to do? You know?
Right.
And that's how faith shaped me, shaped my family, my mom and dad. They were amazing. I mean, they were. I don't rem I saw parents encouraging their kids to lie, encouraging their kids to beat this guy or whatever. My parents, they never said any word that f made me feel like, how can my parents be Christian and encourage such a thing? You hear people
Right.
say, yeah, you do it. If you want to make it in life, you've got to be crooked like everybody else, not us. That's how they raised us.
Yeah.
And that's what I admire with them and about them. And that's why I want them to be a legacy,
Yeah.
because many people can read it. Young parents can read it and maybe wish that they will be something like that.
Yes.
It's inspirational. My parents, I can't, I mean, I was a good mom, but I cannot say I was like my parents. They
Yeah.
were, they are the people who really raised us this way. And I would like to know that other families, that my book can change families.
Right.
You know, because with faith, the faith they, and the faith that we had was not the faith that you impose on people. It's not the faith that you're all the time holding like a sword and I have my faith. It's just your gentleness, your
Yes.
kindness, your generosity, your forgiveness. My mom was so forgiving and always finding excuses
Yeah.
for people, even those who did her said or did something bad. She
Right.
would always find a reason to forgive them.
I love that.
Yeah, so that's how you live your faith, you know.
Yes, I agree. Now, you also speak about the role and of values and godly parenting in your life. How did your parents like make that difference in who you became and what you would say to your parents today about the impact that they can have on their children's lives?
They lived what they preached. They
Yeah.
practiced what they preached. That's it. That's all I can tell you. I see parents telling their children, "Don't smoke. I told you not to smoke," and their cigarettes is in their hands, for example.
Right.
Not my parents. Practiced what they preached. This is, I can tell you in these four words. That's it.
Very powerful. Very true.
Yes.
Now, writing a memoir means revisiting everything, the beautiful and the painful. I'd love to go there with you. So, what was the hardest chapter to write? Like the part of your story that was the most difficult to put into words?
I don't want to cry. I'm easy. I'm somebody who cries a lot. It's the chapter about my loss, the family that I lost. I have a chapter about losing my niece, losing my younger brother, my mom and my dad. That was the hardest to write. And every time I read it, I cry. But I had to write it. I had to write it because it's like doing them justice. It's what they were. I don't want them to be forgotten. And
Yes.
I don't know if I mentioned to you, the book was originally not written for the world to see. I don't know if I mentioned it. The book was written only for my family. I meant it to be for the children and grandchildren. I wanted them to know the legacy of my parents and of the Palestinian Bethlehemite
Yes.
community, and but I wanted them to know who everyone, because they are young. When they get older, I want
Yeah.
them to know who uncle this was, who your Tita and Sido, which grandmother and grandfather
Yeah.
were. And I wrote it for my kids, and actually I didn't mention that why I decided to publish it to everybody, to publicly, because the editor I sent it to, I wanted it to be a very good book so that the kids would read it in the
Yes.
family. They don't say, oh, boring. And by the way, because I'm very poetic, I think my style also helped a lot, my style
Right.
in writing this book and in impacting people.
Yes.
But, and that's exactly what happened when I sent the book to two editors. I had to hire editors because, but see what I told the editors. I said, my condition is this. You do not change any, don't tell me you cannot write, nobody writes in their book about this, it's too personal. Don't tell
Yes.
me. Don't tell me remove this or add that. Only you tell me if you see a punctuation. I'm an editor. I didn't tell them that, but I'm telling you. I'm an editor. I'm not only a translator. But you know, you always have to give it to somebody else to do it.
Yeah, right? Oh, 100%.
So I told the editors, you find that while I'm writing, there was redundance. Let me know. Don't take it out. Highlight it and tell me. If you find punctuation, take care of that. If there's, you know, when you're excited writing, yeah, you don't notice this. And they told me, the editors were like blown away. They said, Miranda, are you saying you're doing this only for your family? I said, yeah. No. One of them was Christian who goes as a missionary, and she went to Bethlehem. And she came back with different mind. And she was so excited. She gave me all her advice free of charge. She wouldn't get paid. She was amazing. And then the other one, of course, I hired her to pay her. And yeah, they told me, no, Miranda, your book needs to be read by everybody. And that's how I decided. So that's why you'll find story of kind of personal.
Yeah.
Why not? It could be, I mean, the brothers or sisters I'm describing. Could be your sister or your brother. I'm sure many people can relate, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that is the hardest, that part. And maybe when I talk about my first husband, father of my kids, because he had a stroke when he was 20, when I was 29 years old, on my birthday, four days after my birthday, I was very young. He was 16 years older than me. And the life I had, so when I remember how we had such a wonderful love and marriage, and very quickly we had hard time, but we stayed together for a long time. We stayed till we came to America and all that. He passed away. So yeah, wow. I'm very sensitive, and I try to avoid reading anything from my book.
So, yeah.
But yeah, that is the hardest about losing, about death. As much as I'm accepting of it. I mean, I know we all have to go, but I think when it is younger, even more. But parents, it was hard, very hard.
Yes, no. We learn how to cope with it, but those feelings always stay within our heart. You know, they don't disappear.
They don't. When I talk about Rawand, my niece, she died 17 years ago. I have to cry when I start thinking about the loss.
Yeah.
She was just about to, she just got a job offer and just graduating and about to go to become a lawyer.
Right.
She was gone. She was lost. She was my brother's only daughter. So it was very hard on them. Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
On the other side of it, like, what surprised you about the experience of writing your memoir, something that you didn't expect to discover about yourself or about your life?
I was surprised that I keep telling my husband and everybody, I'm losing my memory. I forget names and I don't know what. But then I discovered that I didn't lose it. I was remembering the tiniest memory. The minute I started, it was like I opened the bucket of memories, and it was like pouring. You won't believe it. I was working, writing like 18 hours a day. I couldn't stop. I didn't have time even to write points. No points. I kept writing, you know. So that's what surprised me. The memories were so alive, and it's they were just hiding. When I said come out, they came out to play.
Yeah.
So that surprised me most. And the feelings, even the feelings. I remember, like, I was writing about a book. I used to, when I became a teenager, I became like rebellious, like every girl. But rebellious in the Middle East is not like here. Still, I'm in my room. You can't go anywhere in there, you know. My dad will not let me. I'm at home in my room. But I started reading books that I knew my dad would not approve. And there was all this thinking. There was the existentialists. Have you heard? You know, I'm sure you know about the existentialist people like Simone de Beauvoir, Paul Sartre, and all that. So those French writers. So I got into those books, you know, into reading those books. And I was really, I mean, those times. So I remembered, and I, on the edge of the book, I have the book till now, one of them. I was writing, and I sounded so rebellious. I'm saying, yeah, you're right. It was all like crazy. But do you know that I remembered, before I picked the book, which was on my shelf for years and years, I remember that I had written and which pages, not the number of pages, on which parts touched me, and I was, and I found them. I found the, imagine, I remember that I wrote in this book and what I wrote. And it was amazing. So imagine the memory, when you want to remember, it will come back. It
I
was
love
amazing.
That.
Yeah.
Now, if a reader remembers only one thing after finished Scattered Yet Whole, what do you most hope it is?
The truth is, I hope they remember that Palestinians are people just like everybody else. We love, we love, we hope, we forgive, we suffer. I want them to remember that. If they anything else, I want them to see the humanity in Palestinians.
Yes. I love that.
Because we are just one ordinary family. I mean, I'm sure there are many like our family.
Right.
And it just happened that I'm someone who wrote about her family.
Right.
You know, in Palestine, parents will take food. They won't eat. They deprive themselves from eating to pay for their children's college. And they do.
Yeah.
So I want them to see that side and not to keep, like my husband, there was a time he would say, oh, when I say, what about the Palestinians? He says, what, you mean Hamas? I said, Hamas is a group. We are people.
Yeah.
We are, you know. So
yep.
I want them to remember us as the people, as families, daughter, wife, you know, sister.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want. That's mostly what I want them to remember. If they are lucky, they will remember how my parents raised us.
Yeah.
So that they can do the same.
I love that. That's a wonderful answer. And I hope that, you know, everybody will open their eyes and take that into their hearts, because that is a beautiful, you know, way of projecting, you know, how we should be with all the people around us, you know, and really be accepting and loving towards everyone, you know.
Exactly.
Now, what do you want every person listening, no matter where they come from or what they lived, to take away about belonging, about resilience, and about hope?
That giving up should not be an option in life. Resilience is what brought me, why I'm still here today in my state of mind, which is very important, happy mind.
Yes.
It is resilience, and resilience does not mean strength.
Mm-hmm.
Resilience means the ability, the determination to achieve your goal, but also the ability and the willingness to adapt to new situations. When is resilience needed? It's when you suddenly find yourself in a place where it's hard to achieve, and there are so many obstacles on the way. But you are not going to give up. And that's why, at the moment, I am resilient about my book. And I'm going to take it places. And I'm not going to give up. I mean it. You know, like, this is resilience. Take it easy. When things don't happen, I don't push it.
Yes.
I say, God knows. See, again, God is there always. God knows what's best for me. If did not happen, there was a reason. He's protecting me.
Right.
But I'll keep going. I will not take no for an answer. And that's what I did. That's how I survived. That's how I took care of my children. When my husband had the stroke and he didn't get a job for many years, could not work, I had to provide. I was the pampered wife. I was the pampered, comfortable wife. Suddenly I had to keep them in, at the same level. We were sending them to private schools and all that. That was resilience, because my kids meant a lot to me. My determination was to do it and do it the right way, not to go the easy way, find a way to make money. I got people who wanted to give me, I used to work as a, sales and advertising manager with Ford Motor Company in Kuwait.
Right.
And you won't believe it. People will come and they will want to bribe me because to buy, you know, to get things from them or, you know, like order parts or whatever from them for the cars and all that. Yes. And I would kick them out of the office. I would kick them out of the office. And that's where, again, where faith comes. Because even when I was tight financially and I had to keep the family going, I did not go for the easy way. I started working at night doing translation. You know, translate for the TV in Kuwait. And at the same, during the day, I had a full-time job. So, that's resilience. Good resilience.
I love that.
Good resilience.
Good resilience. Yes. Now tell us where we can find your book and remind everybody what the title is.
The title of the book is Scattered Yet Whole, A Palestinian Christian Woman's Journey Through Love, Loss, and Belonging. And it can be found on Amazon. It can be found on at Barnes & Noble or on Barnes & Noble's website. They can go to Goodreads. They can go to my website. My website is my name. www.mirandahirezimunie@gmail.com. mirandahirezimunie@gmail.com. Oh, I'm sorry, .com, not at Gmail. That's my email. mirandahirezimunie.com. That's the website. And on social media. I'm on social media. I am on Facebook, Instagram, on X. X, I'm not very active, but I would say Facebook, I'm most active.
I love
that. They can find me there. Yes.
And we'll put all that information in the description. And for everyone out there, it turns out that we can be scattered by life, by loss, by history itself, and still remain whole. Our identity, our faith, you know, our shared humanity, these are the things that endure no matter what tries to take them down. Now, Miranda has lived through the truth and has given us today in her beautiful memoir. Today, she reminded us all that belonging isn't a place. It's something that we carry within us. And I just want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You know, it's not our religion. It's not our faith. It's not our color. We are all humans. When we all carry the same emotions, we have to bring that unity back together again. We really need to speak out, and you did today, and you reminded us how important it is to just love everyone and to really bring the beauty from within outside and just love everybody for who they are. And, you know, for the people out there, if this conversation touched you, share it with someone. And I want to just thank you once again for being on the show. I hope you'll come back. I really would love to talk more. And, you know, you have a beautiful way of looking at life, looking at people, and reminding us that we all love each, we should love each other and accept one another and not put identities on people, you know, because when you strip away all those identities, we're all the same people. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter who the politics or who you believe in. You know, we're all human and we all care. We all love, and we have to learn to love each other. And
we
not
have
just
the ability. We have the ability to love. It's not like we don't have it. Just use it, you know.
Use it, exactly.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed also talking to you. You're amazing. This is from me. You are amazing. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. All right. Thank you for being on the show. You have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.